Are you ready?
It's Afternoons with OMF.
You know, I played for the Boston Celtics, if you didn't know that, and very proud, too. Played with a lot of great teammates. Even played with some Hall of Famers. Robert Parrish, Kevin McHale, my favorite, Bill Walton.
The Boston Celtics are the greatest because of people like Glenn Ordway, the men who make the Celtics what they are.
Thanks, Glenn. I'm very happy for you. You've done well.
On Twitter, Lou Merlone calls me out. I'm going to pop a Vicodin and get after this guy right now. I don't care.
Launching drugs.
Well, I made it very clear about this whole thing with Kevin Durant. I never called it a report. Reports today, Kevin Durant is going to take a free agent meeting with the Celtics. I love Lou, but sometimes he really gets on my nerves.
Right now.
I can trust you, right? Sure, Daddy. Okay.
On Sports Radio WEEI.
I love Lou. You know, Lou does his thing out in Burlington.
Yeah, we're talking
baseball.
Baseball
show last night. He gets in his car. Yeah. He listens to what's on the radio, and then he starts tweeting away as he's driving in the fast lane.
Oh, there's a lot of traffic.
Yeah, just irritating who's ever on the air.
Let
me get the lollipop boy.
You know, not just that, but you can get in lights when you get back into Marshfield, and I'm listening to Gilroy. Who I enjoy.
You pissed him off.
I enjoy. I think he's good.
You know, I was wondering where the Vicodin reference came from, but he almost died. Right? Didn't he fall off his
Some
porch?
Weird things happen to Gilroy.
He has the worst luck of any person I've ever. Now, let's. I don't even want to bring up his dog.
Leave the dog out of it.
Leave that out
Sensitive.
Of it.
I would say this.
We
don't
if
get
it
the dog.
Can happen to
I care
you,
for dogs.
Okay, his dog heard his show and decided to take his own life.
I would say this about Gilroy, a little overreaction because big deal.
Oh,
they lost
Henny
Kyrie.
Penny.
They lost Al. So you jump off your deck? I mean, come on. Little
he's
overreaction.
Henny Penny.
You know, I don't know about you guys, but like, you know, I was on NBC and with Draper, you know, green teamer, Sherrod, you know, some green teamers.
Right. Do you have to hide your head?
And the way they were speaking about Kyrie Irving, I'm now flipped. I hope he comes back. Because I want to see everybody do the two-step.
What are they saying?
I want to see everybody take everything back about how he's one of the worst leaders and how he's just unique and how he's different and how he brought the team down. Just trashing Kyrie. I'm at the point where I want to see him come back now. Because I want to see these guys how they do it. I want to see how they flip it.
Well, I want to.
I was just joking about all those things that I said. I didn't mean that. I'd love to have you back.
Oh, they would do that in a
heartbeat.
Oh, they would do that in a heartbeat.
Well,
in a heartbeat.
You know, the thing is that you don't even, you don't even mention it. You just kind of just coexist. You just kind of go through the motions like it
well,
never happened.
You know, he is a great
like
player.
Like Heinsohn. When Heinsohn was talking about Horford.
He does make them better. So, I mean, you know, bottom line is they're better today because Kyrie's coming back. And, you know, I think this makes the team better. And, you know, I never said he was a bad player, you know, and maybe he's matured. I just can't wait to hear it. I can't wait to see the spin.
I love Danny, but Danny had the media just eating right out of the palm of his hand yesterday. We're sitting there talking about good people, and you're sitting with four kids. Four kids, one of them might be able to get a nice career in the NBA. Maybe another one gets 2 or 3 years, and two of them may be out of the league in a year or whatever. And he's sitting there talking about, you know, good people and all this other stuff.
Good people is it. Makes coming to work more fun.
Okay, I'll agree with that. Good people do. It's better at work. But if you want to win in the NBA, okay, you get the best players. I love it that everybody in the country beats the crap out of LeBron James. And yet, what does he do? He keeps on winning over the years because he's a great player. I'm with you. Kyrie Irving may be the biggest a-hole in the world. I have no idea. I don't know the guy. But can he play basketball? Yes, I want him on the team. And I'd like to have Kevin Durant on the team. And he seems like he's an a-hole as well. But does that really matter as a fan? You don't know these people. You don't socialize with them. You don't sit and have beers with them. What are we talking
about? Yeah, but
here's
the thing with Kyrie. Like, you know, you talk about his personality. What does it matter if he's got a crappy personality or if he's all over the place or if he's irrational, he's overly emotional? What does it matter? To me, you need just the perfect roster for that type of guy and everyone else to succeed. He doesn't fit with that roster. He doesn't fit in that locker room. And because he doesn't, it's a detriment to everybody involved. So you're putting all the blame on him for what happened last year.
That's not fair.
Listen, he's the leader. He's the self-proclaimed leader, calling up all his buddies, talking about what he should do. If you do that, then I'm sorry. You put yourself out there. You got to take the blame.
That's leadership.
You're responsible. So if they don't change their personality, I'm sorry. You said you're the leader. You need to change.
Christian, I'm not saying he's blameless, but I'm telling you that a lot of other people probably contributed to that. And God, can I say bad things about Al Horford now? He's out of town. Abby, is it okay?
Not officially.
No.
Okay.
Let me
just say this. Where was Al in all of this?
How can you hate on him?
He's the mature adult in the room.
Yes.
it seems to me that he was very passive during all of this stuff. So that's not his job. His job as a maximum contract leader on this team, he should step forward.
I'm not saying
that his personality allows him to do it openly in the public, but privately he shouldn't be dealing with some of this.
He seems like a guy that leads by example. Look, you guys want to be a career? Watch out.
You know how
shows
I lead?
Up early.
I make
stays
the,
late.
I make the perfect basketball play. That's how I lead. But, you know, playing off of what Danny said yesterday, good people and, you know, fun, and superstars, good people, everybody with the same goal, you do look at it, and does the organization, does Danny Ainge, does Brad Stevens deserve criticism for the way Kyrie Irving played? You know, and is he a superstar? Yes. Okay, and last night, because the reason why I say this is I was pointing out last night where, you know, maybe this organization needs to learn how to deal with a superstar.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, LeBron James, he's high drama.
Yep.
All right, Kawhi Leonard, we saw what he did.
Yep.
Anthony Davis, we saw what he just did. Now, he hasn't really won anything yet, but we're going to get to him. Kevin Durant, okay. And they're saying the difference is that those guys win. Well, before Kyrie, I'm pretty sure before this past postseason, wasn't Kyrie's postseason record pretty good?
Yes, excellent.
Wasn't he a pretty good player in the postseason? So why did he fail under you? Maybe it's you. Maybe it's your organization. Maybe you don't know how to handle the superstar in the NBA.
I think that's
maybe
part of it.
Maybe your coach doesn't. Maybe your GM doesn't.
Here's the thing, though. But if you have another alpha dog, if you have another superstar, whatever you want to call it, then it allows him to kind of just be kooky, be goofy, be weird.
It's more like a side act, like a
sideshow where the real leader, where the real emphasis is put on this other guy who really is controlling the situation. That's why it's not – maybe it's not that Kyrie Irving wasn't good for this team, but the overall roster just was – and he mentioned it. Kyrie Irving talked about it. Maybe that was a sign. He said, listen, we need to get another older guy in here. We need to get some vets in here. You think that was a message as far as, you know, how I can communicate and continue, you know, being productive on this team?
But I don't think he was wrong in saying that. You can look at Golden State, and they credit Andre Iguodala for being that guy that kind of keeps the glue together, because you've got some volatile guys in Draymond and Durant, right? So all of this is part of the mix of the NBA. I'm sorry. The Green Teamers have got it all wrong. They want a cute little good team where everybody's a Boy Scout.
No, they don't.
And yet they want
to, you know,
they want to contend for a championship. I'm not sure it all works hand in hand.
They want to enjoy watching basketball.
No, I think it's factor. They just want whatever you give them. Whatever you give them, they will find a way to like it. Hey, you want meatloaf? God, I hate meatloaf. Well, they're giving it to me. It must be good, right? So they're going to eat it.
I love
until
meatloaf.
It goes someplace else. lasagna. God, I hate lasagna. Oh, you know what? But they're giving it to me. It must be good. Whatever you serve them, whatever you put on a platter, they're going to enjoy, and they're going to find a way to make it be important and good for the good of all. Look at you can tell. You just look at every single reporter or beat reporter that covers the Celtics. Any situation, any player, oh, yeah, great. Any guy that leaves, oh, yeah, he wasn't good here.
It is unbelievable how they swing, and watching them from day to day, I thought they were accepting the cute little team. We're going to go back to the rebuilding. We're going with the kids, and we're going to play it out. And they cite Golden State as an example. See how Golden State did it? They drafted these kids, and then they stayed with them, and they were loyal. And so they were all happy with that, and yet every hour now, each one of these Green Teamers are tweeting out about another rumor about another superstar. Oh, Kevin Durant's coming back. Whoa,
it doesn't matter. Whatever you give him.
Oh, wait a minute. Kemba Walker's coming.
No, it is.
Oh.
Sweet.
Whatever you love.
Oh.
Whatever you give them, they're going to eat.
D'Angelo Russell.
Let's make a deal for Bradley Effin Beal.
We had a good time because we did a little optimist, pessimist little segment.
And you were obviously the pessimist.
I was the pessimist. Yes.
He can't play.
Talk about like role play.
But Abby and Sherrod were the optimist, and we're playing off of Sherrod's.
What a shock.
Wait, Abby was the optimist.
Yes. Really? I thought good radio would have been her being a pessimist.
Absolutely.
But anyways, we're playing off of Sherrod's talking about how, you know, free agents obviously have shown they want to play here. Right? And the youth movement. And the five different reasons why you should be optimistic. And the first one was free agents wanted to play here. And he was talking about what you were to be able to lure a guy like Al Horford and Gordon Hayward. But that's exactly it. It's what you were. It's not what you are anymore. You could put the plan in front of you and say, look, this is where we're headed. And that's the reason why they wanted to come play for you. It's also the reason why Al is leaving you. Because the future does not look like it did 4 years ago.
He can't win a ring right now.
And then Abby sort of threw Holly and I off when she said, look, free agents want to come here. Have you heard what Jared Dudley's saying about wanting to come and play in Boston?
Who is that?
Jared Dudley.
What's he, about 35, 36 now?
He's 34 years old. And
former
he
BC standout.
With what, Phoenix, right?
He was Brooklyn.
Brooklyn. He was a role player.
4.9 points.
He's played for
19. He's 34 years old. He went to BC. Yeah. Of course he would love to come here to Boston and finish off his career.
Is he a local
that
guy?
Is not a free local agent no, that you should be interested in.
No.
So they just, it's we'll spin it, but, you know, I don't know. You look at the whole situation right now, and I'm sort of just leaning. I'm still sticking with the whole thing. It's a disaster. Because a year ago, we're talking about winning a championship, and now we got to convince ourselves that the youth movement is real.
Well, based on where you were a year ago, I don't know how you can look at it any other way. And I know they get pissed off when we sit here and we say, oh, my God, this is a disaster. Well, compared to a year ago, it was. You were in a perfect position where you're looking at the Boston Celtics with Golden State maybe expiring in the next couple of years, and you're sitting there going, it's our time. We're going to have a 5-year, 6-year window to maybe win a couple of championships.
But you tripped before the finish line.
Exactly. That's what you did.
Your shoelaces were tied. Right. You didn't even know it.
Right. You suddenly
someone tied your shoelaces together under the table.
Hit your head on the turf and you got a concussion.
You don't remember
that.
We're back. We're 4 years ago?
Here's the deal.
Are we building it again?
We're starting with the Celtics today because we've got two new free agents that people are talking about that are coming to Boston. Kemba Walker and Kevin Durant. We'll get to that coming up next and whether any of that is legit. Alex Cora will join us at 2:30 today. We're doing it live.
Kurt Warner.
Over here at Fenway Park. Kurt Warner will join us at 3:30. He's going to respond to what Chris Sims said on our program the other day. All part of the WEEI Ford Clubhouse Studio. That's where we are.
Fordway, Merlone, and Fourier's broadcast from the Ford Clubhouse Studio at Fenway Park is brought to you by Fraser Engineering. Great people doing great work. Window World of Boston. And KM, Glenn Ordway, Lou Merlone, and Christian Fourier on Sports Radio WEEI.
All right, back down here at Fenway Park, we open up the show talking about the Celtics. And yes, there's another story about another player that the Celtics may be about to sign. Might be a stretch. This is Mark Stein, New York Times. Would you say a credible source?
Sure.
A little bit more credible than... Yep, got the check mark.
Dave? No.
No. A little bit more credible.
We'll get to him later.
The Celtics, I'm told, are emerging as a stealth suitor for Charlotte Hornets free agent Kemba Walker. Stealth. Can you tell me what a stealth suitor is?
Under the radar.
Oh, is that what it is?
Under the team.
Even though you're flying above the clouds.
Yeah, unnamed team. I like that.
Okay. He also tweeted this 50 minutes before that. Boston's cap room situation is a fluid one. Not really. But the Celtics, as Danny Ainge has acknowledged, are weighing their various needs as we speak in both the backcourt with Kyrie Irving and possibly Terry Rozier leaving, and front court with Al Horford exiting. So the cap room situation is not a fluid one. It's either around $23, $24 million if they have Terry Rozier on the roster, and then whatever they end up paying him, and they can, because he's their own player, go over the cap to pay him. Or if they renounce Terry Rozier, then they could have as much as $33, $34 million.
Yeah.
But they're really handcuffed from that point on. You get one max contract player, and that's it. You're done. Then, you know, it's Jared Dudley's of the world filling up your roster. This story is a bunch of crap.
You don't buy it.
This story is a bunch of crap.
But Kemba Walker, even, you know, do you think he doesn't, you don't think he wants to stay?
I have no knowledge. I've talked to nobody about this story, and I'm telling you, just using logical thought process here, which, as you know, I don't usually use. So I'm bringing out the heavy guns today.
Okay, hold on. So you were talking, we're gonna use logic to dissect Kemba Walker in this
situation.
To squash
the green teamer's dreams.
Yes, I'm going to do it.
Let's do it.
And first of all, by the way, can I just say this? First of all, to really piss off the green teamers, Kyrie Irving is a better player than Kemba Walker. Okay, Kemba Walker's a terrific player. Kyrie's better. Here's the problem with this deal.
He's not a dink.
Here's the problem with this deal. Kemba Walker has done a great job on a piss-poor team, and he's put up unbelievable numbers, and he's made this all-NBA team, and so therefore he is eligible for a supermax contract by only one team, his team, the Charlotte Hornets. So they can give him a five-year deal at $221 million.
That's a lot of money.
$221 million. This is a guy who's not made a lot of money. When I say a lot of money, he's on a $12 million. Not a lot of money.
4 years, 48 deal.
I hate to tell you. That's pennies in the NBA.
Well, especially not when you're a two-time All-NBA player.
He's 29. He'll be 30 going over that 30 threshold next year. This is his last big contract, guys. He's not coming back 4 or 5 years from now and getting big money in the NBA. It's not happening. This is his payday. This is where he cashes
in. So if he signs somewhere else, it's 4 years at what?
$140 million.
That's giving up a lot of cash.
Do them at $81 million.
That's a lot of money.
So here's what I think.
I find that extremely hard to believe that he'd give that up.
So here's what I think is going on. Kemba Walker made a huge mistake last week. So Charlotte is bitching and moaning. Michael Jordan, greatest player of all time. Maybe not the greatest president and general manager. They're pissing and moaning because they're looking at it saying, oh, my God. You know, we didn't make the playoffs, but we were right there on the cusp of the eighth seed. But I don't know how much money we can spend because then we're going to get in a luxury tax. This could be really hard for us to move up to a six seed or a five seed. So it's very difficult, and they don't want to spend $221 million. And let's face it, Kemba Walker's not worth $221 million. So what did Kemba Walker say last week when asked about it? Oh, I take a hometown discount to stay in Charlotte.
Yeah, that's
you didn't believe him? You don't believe him?
That's
would actually
not only did I not
money,
believe him.
It's just to appease his fan base.
Does anybody think that this is not a coincidence, that suddenly the stories are coming out that Kemba might want to go to the Lakers or Kemba may want to go to the Boston Celtics? Why? Because he made a mistake, said he would be willing to take less money, and now Charlotte can't sit there and hold on to the $220 million.
Is that his agent wasn't happy with the words he said last week and said, okay, I'm going to spin this. We're going to get some leverage back. And I'm going to tell Mark Stein and others that you're interested in going to Boston and L.A. and other teams.
Yeah, by the way, the stories out of L.A. are that they're interested in Kemba Walker as well, and it's all cropped up here in the last few days.
Right.
Yeah, again, all logic. I've got nobody telling me anything.
Well, turning down $80 million seems like a lot.
Oh, you think?
I would say so, yes. That would seem like a lot. But you also understand, it's like Charlotte sitting there saying, okay, we got this great player, we've been paying him $12 million. Now we got to pay him 45. Did we get better? Can we get better?
No, but I would look at it in the end.
Why am I spending that kind of cash?
I would say this in the end. He loves Charlotte.
So, right? I'm just saying. Yeah. Like, it's not like, you know, by doing this, I can bring in this other guy, too,
they have
and
nobody.
Really get a good team.
No, they're done. If they spend the 21 on him, they're done. They can't get anybody else. And so what they become is what they are right now with Kemba Walker, who's been great the last 2 years. But they're a team that's at best a 7 or 8 seed if they get lucky in the last 2 weeks of the season.
See,
right?
That's what
they are.
So you're using logic, right? And
I
tried to use that with Kyrie Irving because I thought, okay, it made no sense. Logic would force him to stay with the Celtics because in the end,
after everything's
said and done, he could earn the most money.
Kyrie's made money.
Maybe it wasn't enough.
Kyrie's already made money. He's also younger. This guy's not getting another contract.
But still, it's like how absurd is it to think, yeah, you know, I don't need $20 million. I don't know, whatever. But that's the way he is. Fine. So be it. But $80 million, it's a big difference. It's just you can't find a way to walk away
from
that.
The other thing
you
is
make something up.
It's more of what will Kemba do? Okay, go back to, as a Celtic fan, if you have $33 million, you can move around, whatever. You can get Kemba Walker here somehow. Do you want to? I mean, because as far as I know, when you get Kemba Walker, that's it.
Right.
It's not like you can even make a trade because you don't have the contracts for a guy like Steve Adams, right, who's making 27. You don't have that kind of money because then you got to trade money for money because you're going to be at the cap or over the cap. You got to trade money for money. So you got to find $26 million, $27 million in contracts. You don't have that. You don't have any of it. I mean, Marcus Smart's at 13. You know, I don't know how you, if you sign Kemba Walker, how you put the rest of your team together.
You can't. You can't go get that big that everybody's talking about, a Steven Adams or a Vucevic or something. All of that is off the table. Logically, again, it doesn't make any sense. In the end, I think Charlotte is not going to pay him maybe $221 million, but let's say they pay him $180 million. That's still $40 million more than Boston or Los Angeles can pay him. Okay? He's happy. He also can write it off and say, I took less money so that we can get other pieces because we're championship driven.
Yeah, and right? I care about winning.
I care about winning.
So I did you guys a favor. So no matter what I do or how badly I suck, don't yell at me. Don't boo me. I took less to stay here.
Yeah, they'll love him in Charlotte.
No, this is just the whole thing.
He apparently loves the town.
It actually drives me nuts. Just all the rumors and gossip. Every day there's a new rumor about another player, and all you have to do.
But it's all using. It's all leverage. It's all games being played.
No, I get it. But all you have to do is use logic. Right. Why would he do this? What would his motive be
$80 million.
For going to the Celtics? Because he likes Boston? Like he was a fan growing up as a kid?
No, he played in Storrs, Connecticut, and he's from, I think, the Bronx, isn't he?
Jared Dudley wants to come here.
Yeah, played at Boston College. Jared Dudley has a better shot of playing for the Boston Celtics next year than Kevin Walsh.
He probably will.
Is your 11th or 12th player.
Yes.
All this does.
Could be your Chris Humphreys.
So just constantly throwing lifelines out to the fans and to the hey, look, Kyrie's gone, Al's gone, look, make it Kemba Walker. Oh, we make it this guy.
As far as names go.
So what is stealth mode mean? Do you think Kemba Walker is the only guy the Celtics are after in stealth mode?
Mystery team. That's what it usually is. Boris always has a mystery team, right? That's what they're trying. But guess what? They're no longer a mystery team. Mark Stein's throwing it out there. The reality is your best bet might just be this kid Vucevic and then re-sign Terry Rozier. There's your squizzy.
Yep.
Right?
Well, you could do that. That's the most logical thing to do.
Keep
Terry Rozier, sign him to a decent contract.
I'm not sure that's a real good team, but you could do that.
But your option. Everyone keeps thinking that Terry Rozier is gone. He's not gone. They're going to have no choice. They're going to end up because of the process of elimination, signing Terry Rozier.
I said this yesterday. I'm not letting him go right now.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I'm going to wait it out and see if, because you've already given him the qualifying offer at $4.5 million, let's see if any team bites on him. Because I'm not sure a team is going to bite on him. And if they do, is it going to be outrageous? Probably not. You're probably going to be able to match it. It's your own player. You can go over that cap number. But I think the stuff you're going to see from Mark Stein and others, I'm not saying that they're not hearing this from agents, but there's a reason agents are getting this information out. Oh, I got a good one for you. You know, stealth suitor is Boston for my guy, Kemba Walker. Come on, please.
Right.
After you've already heard in Charlotte.
We try to put the heat on Charlotte.
Right. That they love him. But they can't pay him $221 million.
You need to get some leverage back.
Right.
You need to get some leverage back.
Right. Yeah. And you're going to hear this stuff over and over and over again, I'm sure. All right, a couple of quick phone calls, and then Alex Cora will join us. D is in Miami. Hey, D.
Hey, how you doing, guys? On this Kyrie situation, I've been listening the last 2 weeks, and here's the question that I have. You guys say that Kyrie didn't like the young players or didn't want to play with the young players. And, you know, when I hear Jaylen Brown, I'm assuming it's Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. When I hear these guys talk in interviews and press conferences, these guys don't seem like the kind of guys that are cancers that will rock the boat or
I don't think that's the issue, though. First of all, D, his best friend on the team was Jason Tatum when they were on the road.
Right.
Kyrie and Jason Tatum went everywhere together. So I don't think that was the issue. I think he was frustrated by the fact that he's in a different place in his career where he believes he's ready to win a championship. He knows the game. He understands it. He's got a lot of experience. He's seen an awful lot. These kids are naive.
One other thing, too. You know, when you hear a story about how maybe Kyrie and the young kids didn't get along, and then you hear Jackie McMullen say that the young kids didn't get along, and then you hear others like Wojnarowski, whoever it is, you know, reporters, insiders, and they repeat the same story over and over again, you are going to hear us talk about reports that are out there. I mean, it's not, you make it sound like it's just us. We're going off credible people that are in there that know.
Yeah, like Robot Dave. Here's Luca and Waltham. Luca.
Go ahead,
Luca.
Yeah, I'm just so confused. I've heard that the Celtics are signing Taco Fall.
Yes,
they already did.
Yeah, you're like a week late.
Oh, they did.
He's a starter. Yeah, he's a starter.
He's undrafted.
Do you think he'll make a big impact on the team?
I don't think he'll make the team. Look, I'm already on record. He will not make the team.
Glenn's a pessimist. I think I think his number's going to be in the rafters.
There's a new Taco Hero for 2016.
I don't think he's going to make the team.
I think
if they see something here in during the camp of the summer, they'll put him on the G team up in Maine.
I know exactly what they're going to see.
7'6".
Yeah, height.
Rim protector.
Hey, okay, he can't run. So what? He's tall.
It's not real athletic.
Hey, now put your hands up. Oh, now try and shoot. See, you can't do it.
He's not real athletic. He's not.
I know you and his feet. Like, what do you need feet for basketball? Run up and down the court.
What,
stand in the middle.
I tell you what. Larry Bird last night at the NBA awards ceremony did an interesting thing at the end, and he was telling these young players that are playing in the NBA, "You guys are better than what we were. You know, the game is better. You guys are better." I thought it was interesting because I agree with him. I think the game is more athletic, more physical. They play better defense now in the NBA than they did, yes, in the 80s and the 90s. Stop it. You old-timers sit there and say, "Oh, it was much better in the 80s." It was not. So it's these kids are much better today. So Taco Fall could play back in the 80s and 90s. He could be a situational player that could play.
He'd be a starter.
I don't know about that.
He'd be a starter.
Remember Mark Eaton? Remember Mark Eaton out in Utah, the big guy that was
like, remember. Yeah. Guess what high school he went to?
I don't know.
Crespi Carmelite High School. Thank you very much. Wow. Encino, California.
So you had those guys back there in those days. It's very difficult to do it today. They just kill you with this pick and roll, and suddenly you've got to pick up and defend a little guard, and you're sitting there going, what am I supposed to do? I'm up here in the clouds, and he's way down there. Taco Fall, they're just throwing a gamble out. Why not? Plus, you entertain the people in the summer league.
Come look at the freak show.
You said it, I did. Alex Cora joins us next right here on OMF.
Keep up with the show on Twitter at OMF on WEEI. Before, during, and after the show at OMF on WEEI. Let's get you back to more of Ordway, Merlone, and Fourier right now on Sports Radio WEEI.
Fry with a 1-0 pitch. Here it comes. Swinging a ground ball left side. Backhanded by Anderson. Long throw to first. He beat it. Safe. The ball dropped anyway, and the Red Sox walk it off. They win it 6-5. Marco Hernandez with a game winner. A walk-off, a runoff in this case, really, as he hit the ball to deep short. Anderson did all he could. He made a nice backhand stab, threw across his body. It was a hit for Marco, and the Red Sox win it 6-5.
Nice walk-off last night as the Red Sox get to a terrific pitcher who had won 10 games going into last night's game. Time for us to talk to Red Sox manager Alex Cora. It's brought to you by Arbella Insurance and by Cumberland Farms, the official coffee of the Red Sox Radio Network. Good to see you. How you
good
doing?
To see you
all
guys.
Right?
I'm doing good.
A little warm down here, huh? A little warm and humid today.
Yeah, a little bit humid.
Yeah, you might have to wait. Might have to wait around to play a little bit, but you'll eventually get it in.
Yeah.
Well, let's start with last night. So you lose 2 out of 3 over the weekend, and then last night we see something that you don't normally see. You see a manager go out to the mound. Looks like he's just going to tell his relief pitcher, "This is what you need to throw." And next thing you know, you go to the bullpen when there's a 3-2 count at the plate. What was that about?
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those. We've been thinking about this for a while now. In 2011 or 10, and this is where it started. I'm playing winter ball. It's the ninth inning of a game. Man at first, no outs, 0-2 count, and poof, the lights go off. You know, they cancel the game. They suspended the game, so we have to play the game the next day. So 0-2 the whole night, I'm thinking about this. 0-2, what I'm going to do? Am I going to bunt? Am I going to take? I'm going to swing? Which pitch I'm going to see? And it was the most uncomfortable bat of my life. And I had a lot of uncomfortable bats in my life. And kind of like thinking ahead, you know, I said, well, I might manage, whatever. I always thought about that bat, going back to that one. And yesterday was one of those that if McCann hits a double, we were going to lefty. He gets a single. He advanced on a wild pitch to second. And actually, I was one pitch late, you know, because I should have done it right away. He gets to second. Next pitch is a breaking ball. And knowing John Jay, he's a guy that he might expand the zone. He can stay back on the breaking ball and just make contact, and he gets a single. So we got the lefty ready for him. I'm like, you know what? We're going with him. We're going right here. I go to the mound. I tell Brew in a kind of like sarcastic way, you know, like everybody comes in, and whenever I go to the mound, it's funny. Xander is the one that really wants to hear what's going on. You know, like,
why are you over here?
Like, okay, what's going on? And I say, hey, boys, hang in there with your crazy manager. And they're like, huh? I'm like, this is going on. I don't want this guy to stay back on a breaking ball or a bad pitch and put it in play. So I got Taylor ready. Brew, hang in here with me. Taylor, you come in. So he's like, he's all cool. Taylor, he's coming in, and his eyes are huge. Like, I'm like, oh, God, I got to explain this to this kid now. And I go, hey, this is the situation. You got John Jay. You got first base open. We like the next matchup, too, against you. It's Moncada. So it's a kill pitch, what we call. It's either swing and miss pitch or you walk him. And him and Christian, they got together. It was a sinker inside, 96, 97, and John Jay did a good job taking the pitch, and then we move on to the next hitter, and we got the out. We were a little bit limited in the bullpen yesterday, so that's why we stayed with Brewer against Jay with men at first, too. And one thing for sure, Taylor's doing an outstanding job, and it worked out for us.
So with Taylor, though, does he have any – did you tell anybody? You said you've been talking –
Did you call down during
this for a month and a half? Did anyone know, had any idea that this was a possibility, like pregame meeting? Just in case we get a 3-2 count, I don't like what I see, I'm going to put Taylor in?
CB, our bullpen coach, Craig Bjornsson, he worked with me in Houston. He's here with us. He's been here for 2 years with us, and he had a pretty good idea that there's a pretty good chance that I'll do that during the game. You know, I've been telling Dana and been telling Ron Renicki about it, and yesterday he felt that it was the perfect situation for that. And, you know, it didn't work at the moment there, but it's something that you have to keep in mind. And you never know. Like, he throws a good slider there, and he strikes him out. You know, he puts a thought on the other manager. You know, I look at Renteria. He had options, too. He could pinch hit, but
3-2 pinch hit.
Imagine that, you know, like if he pinch hits, we walk the guy, they lose a hitter, they lose a player, and then we get the matchup that we want. It's one of those that actually Tony La Russa texted me last night, and he's like, "Good job." I'm like, "Why?" And he's like, "You show urgency. You know, that's the way you have to play it now."
It's Tony's like, style.
I'm like, "Oh, cool."
Well, what about Brewer though? Was he? I could see that situation. I could see a guy getting. I guess I may have been pissed off about that. 3-2
maybe,
count,
maybe. But he understood the situation. Yeah. And it was more about, you know, his stuff is good. He's actually really good against lefties. But it's about the guy at the plate that he doesn't swing and miss too much. He can, you know, just hit it up the end of the bat. It's a bloop single, and they score a run. But it's nothing against Brewer. He's been amazing for us the last month. You know, he's been doing a good job. And he worked out, and I just saw him, you know, everybody's cool. And in the dugout, the reaction was kind of like, what is going on here, you know. But you try to maximize your the talent, you know, and try to put these guys in a situation to be successful, and I felt we did yesterday.
You know, it's interesting you say, you're talking about that kill pitch, right? Swing and miss or a ball. And on Saturday, you know, things didn't go well, right? The four walks in a row with Barnes and Brazier. And in watching that game, I feel like the guys in the bullpen, they go for that kill pitch a lot. It's one of those things where I'm going to try to get the swing and miss out of the zone. If not, it's a ball. No big deal. I go on to the next hitter. And I know Brazier was struggling throwing strikes. Is there a concern with going to the kill pitch too often as opposed to throwing the ball in the strike zone at times?
Yeah, sometimes there's certain situations that you don't go to the kill pitch. You go to the safety net. You know, it's one of these that I'm learning through the process, you know. We talk about limiting damage, and there are certain situations that you just go to a safety net, a fastball up and away, and the guy might get a single the other way. There's no damage done. There are certain situations that we either won the swing and miss or we move on to the next guy. But sometimes you have to be careful, because if you try to do this too often, then there's a lot of traffic out there, and then you have to be perfect.
Well, because after that game, I mean, I wasn't pleased, obviously. People, yeah. I'm sure you weren't either. I was tweeting that. Sometimes an opposing hitting coach, when you get to that late situation, it's like if you tell your hitter not to swing, it's not easy to lay off 95 here or curveball down. But if you say don't swing, it feels like you guys are giving guys opportunities for walks.
It's one of those, and it's around the league. There's certain times that we talk. We have this daily meeting with the hitters, and there's certain starters in the league that you kind of like, if you see spin, don't swing, because he will throw out of three breaking balls, maybe one will land in the strike zone, yeah. And the other two are, you know, non-competitive pitches. But it's hard because you don't pick up the spin and you swing at it. And it's all around the league. And you start looking at bullpens, you know, obviously New York, I think they've done an outstanding job. But you start looking at their games and it's getting...
It's like walk is better than a hit.
Yeah, you try. Because people feel, and we do feel too, like it's not like back in the day that... Like, guys will sit on pitches. Okay, let me sit on this breaking ball. And until if I get it, I'll swing at it. If not, I'll take the other ones. I think with the new swings and the swing path, whatever, they're looking for one area only. And if they see it, they swing at it. And that's why I think teams are more aggressive pitching to the edges instead of being attacking in the zone.
We're talking to Alex Cora here at Fenway Park on OMF. So you talk about red on your card when it comes to the bullpen and who you can use and who you can't use. And you've manipulated it around with different guys without having a set guy in the ninth inning. I look at Matt Barnes, and at times he's been very, very good for you. Matter of fact, if you look at it, when he's had at least one day in between relief appearances, he's in the low twos in his earned run average. When you're pitching him back-to-back, it's in the mid-eights. Is that something you constantly have to think about, and has that become a hindrance for you when you get into these games, especially when you get the schedule with no days off?
Yeah, and I think where I'm going now with this answer, we talk about it after the Houston series. The thing with this super reliever, because that's what, you know, he
ace reliever. Yeah.
Ace reliever, yeah. Whatever they call it. He was facing 3-for-5, 3-for-5, 3-for-5 every single day. And although your stuff is great, those guys are great too. And it has to take something out of you, you know? Like, you know, as a closer, you know, they bring you in a 9, you're up 3, and sometimes it's a 7, 8, 9. And sometimes it's like bases loaded and the time run is in the under circle. Oh, come in, get your save. And as far as, like, leverage, if you start comparing Matty's season this year compared to other closers, you know, to closers around the league, maybe, you know, it's not the usage, it's the leverage of the situation. It's not that easy. And we got caught up to, you know, for 2 or 3 weeks here that we had those three starts by our fifth starter, you know, Darwinson and Weber and Smitty the whole week. And we've been chasing our tail, you know, as far as, like, the bullpen. And we've been playing close games, too, and you have to go to those guys. And I agree with you. I agree that, you know, sometimes usage gets, you know, it catches on with him. But at the same time, I think the pressure of pitching against the 3-4-5 every single day is not that easy.
But
he can do it.
Does it make it difficult for you to use him? Because you're looking at it saying, he had the 3-4-5 last night. What's he going to be like if I bring him out now in a high-leverage situation?
Yeah, it's difficult, but now has become a little bit more easier. It's become easier because Workman has become one of the best relievers in the big leagues. And Hembry was throwing the ball the way, you know, the best relievers are throwing. So when he goes down, I felt like structure-wise, it was going to be, you know, more structure. You know, like, okay, we can use this guy against this guy, get this guy, and go from there. And Hembry goes down. You know, Walden has struggled with command lately. You know, he hasn't been as dominant. And we have to use guys in different spots. But at the same time, for the struggles that we have had the last week, all of a sudden Taylor is becoming a guy. You know, we saw that in Minnesota, and we saw that in Baltimore. And Brewer, all of a sudden, is feeling better. So, yeah, I know it doesn't look great, but at the same time, I think we found some arms. And, you know, with Steven coming out, you know, he'll be activated tonight. And then, you know, we'll see what happens the upcoming days, you know, with the organization and what we're going to do. You know, I think we're going to be okay. And going through the stretch, we did find some weapons, and when we going to use them?
You know, so when you guys lose a game, or especially at home, or you can't finish it out, there's no, you know, you can't drive in runs with runners in scoring position, you know, specifically of Mookie Betts, I hear a lot, and we've talked about it also, trying to figure out what the hell is going on with a guy like Mookie Betts, like, he's lost his edge, he's not playing with a sense of purpose. I mean, I don't see it, because I don't feel like people just turn off, but I mean, what do you say to people who say, listen, he's different, he's changed, maybe he's concerned with his contract and his numbers? I mean, what do you say when you hear stuff like that?
I think with Mookie, and we talk about it all the time. We talk about it last year.
You talk about it with him?
With him, like a reminder of, it really doesn't matter how you're doing numbers-wise, you still dominate the game. You know, the other day, he was a little bit down on that game. He was 0-for-2, and he walked 3 times, and we lost the game on Saturday. And he was down. You know, like, he feels like he wasn't contributing. And the next day, I say, dude, hold on, come here. You got on base 3 times. You score from second. You can steal bases. There's ways that you can dominate the game, and not everybody can do that. You know, like, if you don't hit, you're not contributing. With Mookie, if he gets on, he can run. He can play defense. So I try to remind him, dude, it doesn't matter. You show up, you're impacting the game. And that happened last year when he was hitting 340, 360, whatever, and it's happening this year. One thing for him, he's always searching. He's always searching. He's always, you know, I think Lou noticed it early in the season, you know, looking for feedback from the dugout. You don't see that often, but he was doing it. And in the dugout, you know, talking to guys and trying to find that swing. I feel Well, I said it. So wait, I'm not going to go through that pass because I said it before, but the two-line drives two nights ago, one to right field, one up the middle, I think he put him in a good spot. Yesterday he goes deep to center field, but we'll see.
You know. So do you think it's fair that, you know, when you're hearing those comments, people who are identifying that are right based on his body language?
They see us a different guy compared to last year, but it's not – the reason, you know, the reason that they feel that he looks that way, they're not right. I just feel that this is a kid that he's searching, he's thinking, you know, and he knows how important he is for us, and he takes it personal, you know, and some guys don't show it, others do, and in his case, you know, when you see him in the dugout just by himself, it's not that he's down, whatever. He's searching. He's thinking about what I did in that at bat. You know what? Where am I? You know, did I swing a strike? Do I need to do this? You know, so that's the case.
You know, there was a stat the other day, and you talk about the bullpen, and I think it was all the AL contenders, and you guys, I think it was 7 losses after leading after the 7th. A lot of the other teams. Tampa's 43-0. Saturday's loss. You come out Sunday, and you're facing Stroman, right? We all know the Stro show. But as you said, you know, we just kind of didn't show up here today. And I've been on teams before where the bullpen is giving up games, you're leading after 7 or 8, and I almost felt like there's a carryover. You know, and guys in that locker room eventually are like, God, I mean, for 7 innings, we go out there, we pitch, we execute, we score, and when we lose that game, it starts to wear on individuals. I don't know if you felt that at all on Sunday, but did you feel any of that given what happened on Saturday?
I'll be honest with you. It's funny because they asked me that question after the extra inning game in Minnesota. And I was like, what? You know, we'll be fine tomorrow. You know, like 17 innings that you play hard and whatever, and we ended up losing. The media kind of like, oh, tomorrow is, you know, they're not going to bounce back. I was the other way around. On this one, and for me, the feeling was more, okay, we blew it with the bullpen. You know, we didn't finish the game. But I feel offensively, we didn't put good at-bats halfway through the game. We had a chance to put him away. We didn't do it, and that carry over. And I knew that the, you know, Marcus coming into that game, he, you know, he wanted that game.
You could tell, I think, especially screaming.
I heard it. He let us know. But,
how'd you feel about that?
I really don't, you know, I saw it. I was like, I told Nunez, I say, Nunez, you're the first big leaguer in the history of the game that you strike out and they pimp the manager, you know?
There was no, but that was right at you, right? There was no
question. If he says something else, he's lying.
It's going to be next time.
Yeah,
so you think it was point to the booth?
We'll see him in Cleveland, I think.
Yeah. Cleveland.
Well, I mean, he should. Yeah. He should be their guy.
Yeah. So, going back to Sunday, you felt like there was maybe a little offensive carryover from the day before?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And it's not that, you know, as far as like showing up and effort and all that, the effort is always there. This group, you know, we don't take days off like that. Preparation, we don't. But sometimes, you know, like energy-wise, you feel it. And it's 162 games. And that one, I was more concerned about Sunday than actually concerned that after the 17-inning game in Minnesota.
Time for the Cumberland Farms question of the week for Alex. It was submitted by Wayne Caliendo from Stonington, Connecticut. Alex, what has been your hardest decision to make as a manager been this early in the season, other than obviously accepting to come back and do this show again?
I was going to say last night.
The sale one, you know, the 17 strikeouts, you know, although he's, you know, he owns that record by himself in the big leagues, you know. It's just him, 17 strikeouts in 7 innings. But, you know, you start thinking about, you know, the 20, 21 strikeouts. That wasn't easy, but I think it was the best thing that, you know, for the team.
There's your Cumberland Farms question of the week, brought to you by Cumberland Farms Farmhouse Blend Iced Coffee.
No music?
No. You know what?
Ah!
You called me out on it.
See?
Road trip, forgot about the music.
Something about London.
Yeah. You know, I was going to ask you about London. Job. You got going to London. Is there anything? Have you ever been to London?
Never.
Never?
Nah.
Do you get
business
some
trip?
I hope your per diem is double.
Are you allowed to, like, you know, go sightseeing?
Thursday. Yeah, Thursday. I just, you know, there's a gala at night, so new shoes, new tuxedo.
Oh, okay. So you got to, you know, shake some hands.
Since he's asking.
Hello, this is Alex Cora, the manager.
No, actually, you got to pack for what, 2.5 weeks? Because we go there,
Toronto,
Detroit, and then Cleveland.
All right, does this concern you at all? Because this is a different road trip than normal. You're doing extra stuff for MLB. Guys' minds might be off here or there. Now, the Yankees are going to experience the same thing. But are you a little concerned? Do you have to have some type of...
On the way back.
Yeah.
We these two games, we know that, you know, it is what it is. But on the way back, you know, Toronto, you know, two out of... we got two big series after that, too. So let's not get caught up only on London. We have to finish the first half in the right note. And then we go to Cleveland.
So real quick, because I know that, I don't know if you've addressed this or not, but David goes tonight, Price, right? Mm-hmm. And just moving him to tonight, was it just health-wise, David Price, Chris Sale, keep him away from London? Guys like Porcello, Erod, get them lined up for London. It's just a different week, right? Just to avoid that?
And take care of them, you know, using the off days. We got two off days after the series. Then we got one on Monday. So they'll pitch in Toronto. They'll pitch in Detroit, too. So we'll maximize those two, you know, in those two series. And we feel Eduardo's throwing the ball well. Rick is throwing the ball well. We should be okay.
Go to weei.com/manager. Submit your question, the Cumberland Farms question of the week. Ask Alex Kaur every Wednesday. They speak funny over there. When you go over there to England, they just talk a little funny.
I think I'm going to use an interpreter.
That's what you need to know.
I was thinking about it. I'll say, on my press conference, an interpreter.
That'll work.
Yeah.
Good seeing you.
Going Spanish. I'll see you guys.
Alex Kaur right here on OML.